Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
I am a general surgeon and surgical oncologist. Title, I am professor and vice chair of surgery at Touro University, and also the founder of Summit Specialty Physicians.
One of the kids wanted to know, can you share what inspired you to pursue a career in medicine and more specifically in your current specialty?
So I was always interested in science growing up. When I went to college, my focus was on molecular biology and started working in a research lab. When I first got into that research lab, really started focusing on kind of disease process. First time I really learned about like disease and how it affects human beings, that really triggered my interest in getting into the medical field. The thing that probably drew me most to the medical field is it's really the most unique aspect of having direct impact on people and the ripple effect. You know, you take care of a patient, they do really well, but the family, the extended family, the work people they work with, like you have this effect on a lot of people you don't recognize right away. When I went into medical school, you kind of learn the basics, all the science, all those things. And then you start your third year. And in your third year, you get to rotate with all the different kind of specialties. So you get to see what physicians actually do in practice. And I was drawn very quickly to surgery for both the very high stress that isn't wrapped around surgery and the massive effect, you know, both positive and negative, right? Surgeons have an unbelievable ability to save lives. We also have an unbelievable ability to harm people if we don't do things right. So that level of intensity is probably not great for my heart, but it's definitely good for my brain and how I function. Today I got focused, you know, as I was going down my surgical training, I got very focused and interested in oncology because it is one of the more difficult areas in surgery, but also, you know, when patients and families are diagnosed with a malignancy, especially when they come to my office, like they already think they're dead. You know, like they're like, you got loved ones sitting there, everyone's focused on death and dying, and then you get to stand there and say, oh no, like this is absolutely something we can do something about. And you're there day and night, you're there during the toughest moments, and many times I tell patients and families, you know, I'm there both for quantity and quality. I want to improve the number of days that someone lives, but I also want to make sure they have a good quality life. And so you have some very honest, very connected conversations with patients and families that, you know, most people don't get to have.
That's great. And you never really think about that as an oncologist also giving good news, which is cool hearing your perspective on that. We have a question from Spain. This is Olala, I apologize if I mispronounce it, but go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, thanks for being here. My question is, what is the most rewarding thing about your job?
The patients, and I lump it together. So there are awesome instances where I get to like hug patients and families and tell them that their, you know, cancer is gone and they get to go back to normal life. And then there are times where I get to hug patients to tell them their cancer's back and they're not going to live long. And you think that those two paths are very, very different, but they're actually kind of the same, right? And it is the concept that I get to be there, I have the responsibility to be there, and I have the privilege to be in both of those rooms. You know, it's, you know, I laugh. I used to wear like a white coat, you know, like at one point there's a cleaning service that comes to clean your white coat. And The cleaning person who was picking up my white coat would always see makeup on my shoulder. Because when I'd give somebody a hug and they were crying, their makeup would end up. So I'd always have like a makeup stain on one shoulder. And so she was always like, "What is this?" And it's like, "Hey, we hugged it out. I just stopped wearing a white coat for that reason."
They're like happy tears, sad tears. You have to like, it's all the same. You have a question from Vicente in Europe, and I apologize again if I mispronounce that. But go ahead and ask.
Okay, thanks for being here. Was a surgical oncology your first choice, or were there others like a brain surgery or something like that?
Yeah, well, when I started medical school, I was pretty focused on being a cardiologist. I had had a funny heartbeat when I was in high school, and so had a million heart tests, met a million cardiologists. So I was really interested in heart, like the heart physiology, heart anatomy, so on and so forth. It was only during my third year rotations where I rotated on the surgery service that I changed my mind and decided to go into surgery. And then when I went into surgery, my first interest was vascular surgery. My second interest was actually cardiothoracic surgery. And then when I got to do surgical oncology, I really enjoyed it. And my mentor in Boston was a world famous surgeon, and I met with him and said, "You know, I'm really interested in kind of doing surgical oncology." And at that time, probably the top training program in the world was Edinburgh, Scotland. And so he picked a phone, called the program in Scotland, and asked if they'd take me, and they said yes. So kind of how I got there.
Very. We have a question from one of our kids. They actually specifically about Harvard, and they wanted to know, do you think that some stereotypes about how difficult it is to study at Harvard are false or are they true?
Getting in is hard. Getting in is extremely hard. Once you're in, it's probably the same as everywhere else. The only thing I say that's different, and I tell the story like kind of jokingly, there was one day I was working, and there was a really complex patient who had this very odd disease. And we were presenting at this conference. You had to present the child and like work it up as to what they had. And so I got up, I presented the whole thing, I talked about the whole thing, and an older surgeon in the back looked at me and said, "Saju, what do you think this person has?" And I said, "Well, I think they have this type of AV malformation, yada yada yada." And he said, "Well, what does the book say?" So I told him, like, "Hey, this is what the book says, and this is where this patient doesn't quite fit." And I said, "But I think the person who wrote this chapter might have been erroneous." And the person who wrote the book chapter was a guy named Judith Folkman, who was world famous vascular surgeon who invented or discovered VEGF and so on and so forth. Well, the old man who asked me that question happened to be Judith Folkman. And that's just everywhere else you'll have that event, and the guy looking across you'd be like, "Interesting. Harvard, it's the guy who actually invented the damn thing that's looking at you going, interesting, you know?" So,
What are the odds of that?
unfortunately, at Harvard, pretty damn high.
Yeah,
The
pretty
wild damn side
high.
is you become the content expert because you're it, right? Like the other side of his life was on call for vascular surgery, and this patient came in with a real complicated issue. And I said, "Boy, this person needs this." And the chief resident looked at me and goes, "Saji, you're the on-call vascular surgeon for this surgeon." I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "That's the guy who invented this entire field. So you're the expert now." And I was like, "Boy, this poor person is like in trouble because I don't know anything."
No pressure. No pressure.
Exactly.
All right, rolling it along, because we know it's getting kind of late for some of our kids in Eastern Europe and in Asia. So, Deli, you had a very good question. Go ahead and ask your question. All right, we
Hi,
might
my
have. Oh.
patients. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh,
Sorry.
okay. You diagnose patients all the time with very complicated issues. How can you handle the sadness those patients feel all the time?
Number one, you connect with them. Number two, you recognize that their sadness is acceptable and normal. And then number three, know that you're there from a job standpoint to help patients get better. And you can't always do it, right? Like, we're not robots. You're not, you are all each human beings, right? You screw things up, you make mistakes, but hopefully every day you try to learn to be better, and every day you just show up and put in your 100% effort. And patients and families know that.
So, one of our kids, they had reached out and they had asked, was there anything that you had wished you had became before you wanted to become a doctor, or did you always want to be a doctor?
No, I started by wanting to be a molecular virologist, so working on viruses. I will tell you today, if you said, "Hey, you can't be a surgeon, what would do you want to be?" I would probably tell you that I would be a teacher. And I would point out and recognize the financial difference my current career to that of a teacher is, but I'm setting aside the financial parts. Much of what I do is teaching patients and families about their disease process and how we approach fixing it. So I do enjoy that aspect.
All right, we got two more questions. I'm gonna let you go. We got Fedor. Fedor, здравствуйте. Go ahead and ask your question, friend.
I have a question. Do you get to treat young people like children, 8-year-olds and 13-year-olds, maybe?
Yeah, so I go down to about 13, 14. I have helped children younger than that, but in general, that's in combination with a pediatric surgeon as well. So it is more, I'm assisting because the anatomical or the surgical technique is something they don't feel comfortable doing, but I do.
Very good, very good. And for our final question, I always ask this of all of our guests, is there any advice that you could give to these kids as they go off into the world and kind of figure out what kind of paths they want to go down?
Number one, I always say, do what you love, right? Like, forget money, forget fame, forget all those things. If you do something you love, A, money will find you, B, fame will find you, and C, it becomes a lot easier because the grind is real, right? I probably average 100 hours of work a week right now, right? And putting in 100 hours of work. And this is when I was a resident, it was 130, 140. Now I'm down to 100, and 100 is a lot of hours. But, getting up every day and going to work, working all day, all night is not something you do. The money doesn't make it worth it. It's the joy of doing what you do that has you do it.
Wonderful, wonderful advice. And guys, thank you so much for joining us wherever you're at in the world. We have a lot of wonderful learning opportunities for you guys this week. We have a virtual college fair tomorrow. We have scientists in Antarctica who are going to be zooming with you guys and answering your questions. And then Dr. Stephen Wolfram will be connecting with you guys about his career in physics. So before we let you go, Doctor, I traditionally allow everyone to unmute and then I'll end the meeting for all. But can we all say thank you to Dr. Saju Joseph for talking to us?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.